Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. My name is Michael Footer.
And I'm Amanda Farrow.
And if you aren't familiar with our work, I am the former news editor at Game Informer. I was there for a few years. I wrote a couple of books, the Game Dev Business Handbook and the Game Dev Budgeting Handbook.
Oh, no way. I had no idea you were an author.
Oh, well, surprise. I am an author. You can check those books out at gamedevbizbook.com. I'm also a freelance writer and a consultant.
That's really exciting. Your resume is way more exciting than mine.
I would have never been an editor-in-chief. You have been an editor-in-chief.
I guess twice over. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, if you're not familiar with my work, I'm the former editor-in-chief at GameDaily.biz and SuperParent.com. These days, I run a small streaming show. It's small for now. Apparently, I'm going to like take over Mixer eventually.
You should do this.
I stream on Mixer 3 days a week under the alias of Ready Player Mom, which is another concept that I had a while ago, and it's actually been around for a couple years, but we just revived it, so that's really fun.
And Amanda did all of our branding for Virtual Economy, and she did the branding for Ready Player Mom, and it's really awesome. I want to talk a little bit about what this podcast is. This is episode zero, so this is our pilot, this is our catch-up, this is our state of the world. And boy, the world is fun right now.
The world is a lot. Why is everything so much all the time?
Because 2020 is a decade long. Surprise.
Hooray.
Hey. So, Amanda, why don't you talk a little bit about what your vision was for the BizCast, which was one of your projects at Game Daily, and how we're going to be springboarding off of that.
So when I pulled together the BizCast originally in 2018, I was really excited to just talk about the industry, to talk about video game news, to talk about it and put it in context with what's going on with the business of making games and filter that through a cultural lens so that different kinds of people, people that are working in the industry, people that are industry enthusiasts and they've come to love this industry over the many years that they've been paying attention to it, or perhaps they're brand new. You know, we were trying to appeal to a pretty broad audience, but we dug really deep, you and I. Mm-hmm. Like, those were hour-long conversations that we used to get into to talk about the biggest beats in gaming news. And, you know, one of my favorite things about the BizCast was that we got to riff for an hour. Mm-hmm. And it was a ton of fun, you know, popcorning back and forth and getting other people's thoughts and rounding up essentially what happened in the news that week. So we're kind of doing that on Virtual Economy, but we're doing it on a daily basis for now. I don't know how long we'll be able to keep that up, mm-hmm. because it could be that I can't keep up with the workload, yeah. because I'm producing the podcast too.
Well, we'll see what happens. Right now the kids are home, you know, for a couple of weeks as schools are closed.
At least
as they shift to remote learning. So it's going to be a challenge, but we'll talk a little bit more about this at the end of the show, but we have some exciting stuff lined for this first week at the very least. Each episode, we're going to cover the biggest business beats. We're going to bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. Again, we have some cool names to share with you at the end of the show. But the twofold purpose of this show is to provide the news, the business side of the news especially, with context, and to make it accessible, because my ethos, especially back when I was at Game Informer and writing the books, you know, I write explainers. My goal is to ensure that everybody who wants to be educated and be part of a conversation about complex issues has the tools with which to do so. So for, you know, we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but we're going to be taking questions. We're going to be spotlighting some cool indie projects. But we wanted to start first with kind of setting the stage for where we are right now, in the midst of the COVID-19 outbreak, work from home for a lot of people, schools canceled.
Some of them for the first time.
Yeah. I mean, I've been working from home since 2013. Well, 2012, I guess. 2011. Okay, so I've been working from home for the majority of, well, I guess for all of my career as a writer. Back when I was in nonprofits, I worked in an office. But as a writer, I've always worked.
I've been working from home since 2009. And that's when I was working as a designer, a web designer and a web developer, and moonlighting as a writer. If you want to know those stories, those live on other podcasts.
Yes.
Lots of people have asked us, like, who we are and what we do and why we do it. It's everywhere. We're prolific. You can't escape us.
And you can always ask us questions. And this podcast has its own social media profile. You can hit us up on Twitter at @VirtualEconCast. That's @VirtualEconCast. And we'll hit that up again at the end of the show. So we want to start with, obviously, this is a very strange year. We have new consoles coming out.
Yep.
The Xbox Series X, the PlayStation 5. Usually in a year where you have new consoles, E3 is big.
Enormous.
GDC is big. Absolutely. Gamescom is big. Right now we know that GDC, obviously, which was supposed to be this week, canceled.
Yep.
E3 was canceled last week.
Postponed.
Postponed. I mean, GDC was postponed also. I think E3 actually was labeled as canceled, not postponed.
Really?
It was GDC that was labeled as postponed. They're going to try to do something.
Right. Oh, something in the summer.
And I don't know what shape that's going to take. I'm interested. But obviously, one of the things that's happening right now is talks are being streamed online starting today. Nintendo announced their Indie World Showcase. That's going to be happening tomorrow.
Which would replace their GDC Nindies event.
Mm-hmm. Which is always a good time.
It is, yeah.
So, obviously, there's a lot of impact from that. And we obviously know that the shows being canceled provides direct complication for a number of people.
Of course.
You've got flights that are canceled and or flights that need to be refunded. And, you know, we're seeing varying success, I guess, amongst people who are securing them. I saw one of our colleagues was having a challenge getting his ticket refunded from his airline. Obviously, we've got hotels and stuff. That's
Airbnbs
are,
because their cancellation terms vary from property to property and host to host. So it's been a pretty significant nightmare, especially for indie developers and smaller studios, where they're watching helplessly in a lot of cases as their biggest networking opportunities of the year are just siphoned away.
And I think that's one of the ripples, right? We've talked about this. You and I have talked about this on social, that there is an importance to GDC and E3 that goes beyond the talks, that goes beyond the show floor, that goes beyond even
the
just
glitz.
The glitz, right? And it's GDC especially. When I was there in 2017 doing interviews for the first book, it was interesting as people, because I interviewed, I think, 19 or 20 people that week.
That was a lot.
It was a lot, and I was sick at the time. Believe me, if it were right now, nobody would want to come near me if I sounded like I did back at
It was really
GDC.
Bad.
It was
so
bad.
I can't even imagine how difficult the transcriptionist had to.
I pity them. I do. So, but there were people who were coming, and there was one deal that I know either kicked off right after a meeting I had with a publisher, or was a continuation of a conversation that ultimately led to an acquisition. It's very cool to like have been like, oh, I saw you meeting with them right after I interviewed you for the and I interviewed both sides of that one for the book.
Oh, I remember that.
So it was really, really interesting.
Vague.
You could probably figure out if you read the book.
Everyone should read the book. We'll plug the book at the end of the podcast.
So one of the things that really became clear to us is that the big thing that people are going to be missing out on, if they were pitching or showing their game, they've lost out on that opportunity at GDC. They've lost out on that opportunity at E3. So,
and it's not just about FaceTime with publishers either. It's FaceTime with the media, because the media is going to congregate. And it's difficult to get a lot of us wrangled into the same space outside of events. You can do media junkets, but those are challenging and expensive.
They are. I think GDC 2016, I met with Paul Kilduff Taylor before they were ready to show Frozen Synapse 2 and Tokyo 42, which was a game that they published. And I got, you know, he and I just met up in part of the Moscone Center, and he just showed me on his laptop. And that's the kind of things where it's like,
those chance encounters,
exactly,
they're not going to be a thing. So, Mike, is like, what kind of ripple impact is this going to have? What are we seeing out there?
Well, we're seeing that there are people. There's two sides of this. Obviously, the negative is that you've lost all this face time with potential publishers, all these potential pitches, these opportunities to show your game to the press have been lost. And in their wake, people are stepping up. I just retweeted earlier today, Gamepedia is leveraging their platform similarly to how I did, where it's just like, hey, if you are an indie developer and you've got a game, we'll boost you. And it's great when we see people who have larger platforms. And Gamepedia, I think, has 125,000 followers versus my 11,000 and change. So when you have bigger people who are stepping up and doing that, the impact is obviously exponential.
Yeah, and streamers are also stepping up mm-hmm. and saying, hey, look, you know, I'll throw you a shout out on my stream. And these are folks that have tens of thousands of subscribers, if not hundreds of thousands of subscribers, over on their Twitch or their Mixer streams. So, I mean, everybody really is banding together to ensure that indies get a fair shake this year, because they were dealt, man, they were dealt a shitty hand.
Yeah. Well, and we're, you know, here at Virtual Economy, we're doing our part as well. We are going to be highlighting an indie developer and their project on each show as often as we can anyway. We do have someone who you'll hear from later on this show. We have someone lined up for tomorrow. If you are an indie developer and you have a game that you were planning on pitching or showing, if you are about to go to sale, if you just launched, and your announcement has been kind of subsumed by all of the talk about COVID-19, please DM us. Again, it's Virtual Econcast. We would love to take a couple of minutes during our show to talk about your game, direct people to your Steam page or your itch.io page where they can wishlist. If your game is for sale, we'd love to drive people there as well. We're just interested in highlighting cool projects, and I'm actually really excited about the first game that we have.
Oh man, this is a good one.
To talk about today. So one of the things that also popped out this week, DFC Intelligence, I guess last week, it's Monday, right?
It's Monday.
Happy Monday.
Is it?
I don't know. Everything feels unmoored right now, days of the week. I saw Gene Park tweeted, today is Monday, and I'm only tweeting that so I know.
Yeah, that tracks, because we have the children home and we have 4 kids. So, I mean, it's more of an extension of our weekend at this point, it feels like, because they're not back in school,
mm-hmm.
like even in virtual school.
Yeah, virtual school starts Wednesday.
Yeah, it's rough. So yeah, today's Monday.
So last week, DFC Intelligence released a report. Now, I think it's interesting today, before we dive into the DFC Intelligence report, which has one thing in there that I disagree with, one thing that I feel very strongly about, positively in terms of agreement, that Microsoft has been, their approach to announcing pieces of their Xbox Series X rollout has been very strange. And
I think it's way different from console generations past.
Well, I think absent COVID-19 and social distancing and the cancellation of events, people are like, okay, why did they announce the name at the Game Awards? Why are they just dripping this stuff out on Xbox Wire? Why are, you know, this is the weirdest way to do it. And yet today, you know, GDC was supposed to be this week. So I assume that they were going to have some of this as part of a presentation at GDC, but they had Digital Foundry was out mm-hmm. and did their first hands-on.
They always console. Do great work.
There was a huge media blitz today with GIFs about the difference in loading times and a tech demo of the suspend and resume for multiple games. So it's really interesting that Microsoft, who had this weird approach prior to this, actually positioned themselves very well.
Yes.
For this weird situation that we find ourselves in. They also, in that information today, reconfirmed a holiday 2020 launch. Now, I think that's really interesting. And you and I have had this conversation about what might happen. Yes. What are your thoughts about where the console launches are going?
I think it's a far-fetched idea that one of the things that you and I ended up talking about a month ago, I think it was about a month ago, mm-hmm. was there is probably going to be a very, very limited supply of consoles available at launch. I know that folks are starting to think about, okay, well, they may not launch this year. Nah, they're going to launch this year. No one's going to be able to take that holiday gap and just displace it to another year. That's too risky mm-hmm. from a retail perspective. So we are going to see some Nintendo Wii scarcity.
I agree. I think it's going to be 12 months.
At least. I think that 12 months is probably pretty liberal. I think on the conservative side, you know,
yeah. I mean,
we're seeing, I think it's going to be closer to 18.
Look, I would love to be proven wrong, because we're going to be seeing that weird demand, especially around the holiday.
Oh, of course. But I think that we are going to run into the same kinds of situations that we ran into when the Wii first launched, mm-hmm. where, you know, online shopping wasn't as much of a thing back then, but these days it is. So, I mean, we're not going to have people like milling around and like waiting outside stores all that much. But I mean, we don't have Toys R Us anymore.
We don't.
Which was a significant source.
Target is stepping up in a big way, though, and they've actually done really well. They've beaten the average. They have definitely surpassed the average, and part of that is because of the way, if you go into a Target and look at how all of the Switch games and the Switch kiosks are positioned, they're right up front. So Target went big on Switch, and it's paying off for them. I think Best Buy is going to do well. I think Walmart is going to do well.
Walmart did really well with the Wii as well.
Right.
Like, they were a huge supplier. It was like them and Toys R Us Canada.
And I had pre-ordered mine at GameStop. Here's what I'm going to say.
Oh, yeah. So, like, what do you think about this?
My feeling on this is, yeah, I agree with you. I think we're going to see extremely constrained supply. Right, especially today, we know that Microsoft has no plans, or at least is not communicating any plans. They're not communicating any plans about a potential delay. Sony hasn't said anything yet. DFC Intelligence actually believes, in their report summary, the conclusion is that the coronavirus is likely to have a major short-term impact on delivery of both systems. And then they go on to say there's a strong likelihood one or both systems will not make a 2020 launch. I disagree. I don't think it's strongly likely. I think it's possible, but I think that it's more likely to launch with constrained, very constrained supply and get it out there and build that demand, because DFC goes on to say that consumer demand is likely to be stronger than ever.
Absolutely.
So I just don't see a situation right now where they delay. Now, as the situation progresses,
Maybe things will change. I mean, it really depends on whether or not social distancing and this self-isolation ends up flattening the infection curve.
Yeah.
Like, we will have to see. I know that things are starting to slowly get back to normal in China, but there are other pieces of the supply chain that aren't in China.
Well, there's also the issue that there's potential reinfection opportunity. So if you've had it, you might not be immune to it.
There's not enough research.
Yeah. And yet, also what we know is that viral shedding, which is, you know, your contagious period, can take 3 weeks. So even after you have had it and recover, you may still be
injured. It's rough out there. So we're going to monitor the situation. And if we have to eat our words, mm-hmm, like 6 months from now,
we'll do it.
Best believe that we will do it.
So I want to move on. We have a reader question. I'm going to jump to that. That kind of piggybacks in with some of the stuff we're seeing. You know, obviously there are a lot of businesses that are affected. When we talk about the direct impact of GDC cancellation, of E3 cancellation, we talk about developers, we talk about publishers, we talk about who are planning to fly into these events. What we haven't talked about is the local economy ripple effect. I mean, LA Live during E3. Starbucks. I mean, all of those businesses, those restaurants do huge amounts of business whenever there's a convention. It's not just E3.
No, I was down in LA for like just tangentially in the area, mm-hmm, of non E3 convention, where it was just a lot of muggles, and it was very strange. It was weird. There were no banners. But there were lots of people, and LA Live was full. It was full of folks. It was full of folks looking for a coffee, looking for a bite to eat, and just chilling out. It's not just food either. It's also hotels. Mm-hmm. It's also taxis and, you know, Uber and Lyft and everything like that.
Everything that touches tourism is affected by this, whether it's professional, you know, business travel or it's personal tourism. Everything connected to it is going to be affected. So we do have a reader question today. This one comes from Jeremy Jackson. And Jeremy asks, how important is business insurance for indie game developers? And are there any resources, specific insurers or sites that you'd recommend for further research and/or purchases? I don't think we're in a position to make any recommendations about where you can purchase, but we did reach out to Brandon Huffman, who is a friend. He is an attorney, and he's the founder of Odin Law and Media, and you may hear from him later this week.
That's a spoiler.
Spoilers. And Brandon says this: for insurance, the best advice is to get a good broker and understand what they are recommending. Also, to know that contract requirements, often general liability and errors and omissions, may be required by a publisher, for example, should be seen as a floor and not a ceiling. So that's your bare minimum, is what Brandon is saying. Many indies will not purchase directors and officers insurance, otherwise called D&O insurance, or employment practices coverage, for example, thinking that they're small and they don't need it. But it can be a lifesaver. A company that has a founder dispute or a terminated employee for maybe a few thousand bucks in insurance premiums could avoid six figures or more in legal and settlement expense. Oof. I get that every dollar on insurance is one less for development, but it's something they should at least be looking at. A really good broker should be able to understand the business and the insurance budget and make suggestions. So Brandon's general feeling here, if I can interpret his thoughts, and he'll tell me after if I'm wrong, is that you should be thinking about this kind of thing all the time, not just when we have an emergency pop up. So this kind of insurance coverage, whether that's that's for event coverage or it's for your company at large, if you have a contract with somebody who requires something, consider that your baseline, not your maximum. And you can be penny wise and pound foolish and not purchase insurance plans for a variety of things.
Wow, that was an adage.
It was.
That was an adage.
Or you can protect yourself and build into your annual budget insurance premiums that will ultimately keep your company safe in the event of any kind of emergency, whether that is, I guess we can call this a natural disaster?
It kind of is, yeah.
Or something that would happen during more routine business.
It's important, and this is something that Mike and I often talk to indie developers and folks working in the industry that maybe don't think that they know enough about business, and they're like, okay, but I just want to make games. These are the kinds of things that we always recommend indie developers to pay attention to. Even if you're working in a micro studio where it's just you and a couple of contractors, or it's you and a partner or whatever, it's important to consider what your options are to ensure that you are protected, your people are protected, and the most important thing, that the work is protected.
Mm-hmm. And part of that is make sure you have an attorney that you can turn to, or a lawyer if you're outside of the United States.
I was about to say.
Yes. It's not an attorney everywhere, just here in the States.
Just here in the States.
Just here in the States.
That's a good question. Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you, Jeremy. So one thing before we focus on our indie spotlight for the day, one of the other things that popped up, and this is the kind of the last bit of news, and this really surfaced it for me, EA is one company among many that has issued a work from home order for all of its business, for all of its employees, rather. And that includes staff members that are working on maintaining live service games.
Yep.
So I really appreciated their statement because it directly identified, like, hey, we're in uncharted waters here. There may be some potential disruption to live service games. They're obviously trying to minimize it, but they put the focus on their employees and the families.
That makes sense.
But what's very interesting to me in this situation, again, you and I've worked for
gosh, so many years.
One of the things that we have heard individually and collectively is how hard it is to find a remote job in this industry, whether that's you need to be in the newsroom or biz dev or dev relations job or something. You need to be in the office. It has to be on site. It's not remote. I'm curious how this is going to change, or if it does change, how companies start considering their talent pool remote work for those that they really want to bring on.
But that person is tied to a specific geographical location, much like we are.
Yeah, it's just an interesting, it's another one of these weird ripples that's happening.
Exactly. Or, I'm sorry, your very favorite term.
Knock-on effect?
The knock-on effect.
The knock-on effect.
That's how you, spoiler alert, you ever read anything that Mike writes, that's how you know it's one of his, even if it's not his byline. It'll say knock-on effect in it somewhere.
Probably.
With the cancellations of GDC and E3, we're going to be featuring an indie developer on each episode. And our first developer spotlight is Tony Hughes. Hi, Tony. Tell us a little bit about your game.
My game is called Agony of a Dying MMO, and it is an indie horror game that takes place in the final hours of a massively multiplayer online game called Garden of Widows that is going to permanently suspend service to its last remaining server, making it unplayable. The game sort of explores the darker side these MMOs have, and the kind of power they hold over the people who get addicted to them. Many of the players you encounter in Garden of Widows are obsessed with finding this fabled NPC called Adam. The rumor is that finding Adam will give your player godlike powers within the game and unlock new areas, but no one's ever found him. As the game draws closer to shutting down, it's starting to dawn on the community that they may never find him and have actually wasted countless hours searching for him. At the same time, bizarre and unsettling things are occurring within the game, like the game is actually alive and despairing over its own inevitable death. The game is done in a low-poly PS1 aesthetic to match the graphics of late 90s or early 2000s MMOs. I'm very interested in this phenomena of community and subcultures forming on digital platforms then essentially being erased when these spaces get shut down. And I thought it would be a very sad and tragic thing to explore in a horror game using a fictional MMO.
How far along are you in the development, and what is your biggest need right now to move your project forward?
So I started this last June as a different idea, but pivoted to the idea of a dying MMO using most of the same assets in the fall after being inspired by Oleander Gardening's haunting and beautiful IGF-nominated game, Pagan Autogeny. I will definitely be working on this through the rest of the year, and maybe into the next one. In the near future, I'd either like to do crowdfunding or try and get a publishing deal so I can work on this game full-time.
Where can people find you online? Do you have a Steam page or an itch.io page where people can wishlist your game?
People can find me on Twitter at DuckBubbles. And you can find Agony of a Dying MMO on itch.io to wishlist. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us, Tony.
Awesome. All right, cool. So thank you so much, Tony. Thank you so much for sharing your work. This game sounds absolutely cool.
It sounds bonkers. I'm so into it.
I can't wait to hear more about it. That about wraps us up for our episode zero of the Virtual Economy podcast.
I love zero arrays. This is so good.
We did it. So we have guests lined up for the rest of the week.
We do.
And now, obviously, there's a lot of weird stuff going on. Things may change. We need to be flexible. But right now, for tomorrow's show, we have PR wizard Stephanie Tinsley.
On Wednesday, we've got Brandon Huffman, founder of Odin Law and Media, coming to chat with us.
We did tell you it was a spoiler.
Well, yeah. Spoiler. We just didn't say for which day.
That's true. Thursday, we have Matt Piscatella, who's a video game industry analyst at NPD, and really, really smart.
He's super smart. We love talking to him. And on Friday, Victoria Tran, who is the communications director at Kit Fox Games, she's going to come and have a conversation with us about community management in these challenging times. Victoria was also on our panel at PAX East.
Our video game marketing gone right and so very wrong.
And she is, this is going to be like poke, pressuring her to actually make her amazing community manager decides, CM decider, like art decider. that was such a fun panel. I'm so bummed it wasn't filmed. But anyway, Jory is great. I'm really looking forward to having a conversation with her about community management.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Calls to action. So indies, as I mentioned earlier in the show, we are looking to highlight your games. Especially if you were looking to pitch or show your game to the press at GDC or E3. Come talk to us. We'd love to give you a platform. We're hoping to spotlight a developer and a game on each one of our shows. We're so grateful for you listening to the inaugural virtual podcast.
The zeroth episode. Zeroth episode?
Mm-hmm.
I got nothing.
Amanda, where can they find us on the Twitters?
You can find us on Twitter at virtualeconcast. I'm at Amanda Farrow.
And I am at Footerish, F-U-T-T-E-R-I-S-H. If you would like to be spotlighted in our reader question, we encourage you to send us all of your questions. We will answer as many of them as we can as we record these episodes.
I like reader mail.
Me too.
This is like so new to us. We didn't do reader mail on the BizCast because we didn't have time.
This has always been my dream to have reader mail. You can email us with questions at podcast@fsquared.biz. That's podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, at fsquared.biz.
Oh, nailed it.
Yeah, I can spell. Our DMs are also open at Virtual EconCast on Twitter, so you can send us questions there. And we'll be back soon.
In the meantime, wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another. And we'll see you tomorrow.